to help fund policies and programs that really do work to keep teens safe and prevent teen pregnancies.
That was the voice of Amy Moy, the Director of Community Affairs at Planned Parenthood Golden Gate and the Field Director for the No on Prop 85 campaign in San Francisco and San Mateo counties. Prop 85 was defeated by California voters in November, as was an abortion ban in South Dakota. We'd like to thank both of the groups joining us on this edition of Movements. Movements is a weekly investigative journal devoted entirely to social movements. It is an attempt to expand awareness and understanding of individual struggles and how they relate to larger global efforts. That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to Movements with host Emily Howard. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts, to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Emily Howard in Berkeley, California. Thank you for listening. And see you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio, which is what you're tuned to, 101.1 FM or freakradio.org, it's Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. That's me for 2 hours with special guests Mr. and Mrs. Smith. No, they're not armed. Actually, correction, one is armed with a guitar, and we'll see just how dangerous he is. In fact, you're about to hear him right now.
All right. I'm going to dedicate this to a homeless friend of mine who got busted taking a shit. This one is called Doo Doo Dump.
Crime.
Thank you very much.
Bravo, Mr. Smith. So, Mr. Smith, and I should say Miss Smith or Mrs. Smith or Smith and Smith, I should say.
Smith and Smithy.
You've been on the streets a bit, and of course I was recommended to you as I was watching an instance of a police arrest, two people who were intoxicated, but as far as I could see, were able to take care of themselves, and I thought the police were doing part of their cleanup routine.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot out there.
Move closer to that mic. You got to be within about an inch or two of it in order to actually be heard the way you need to be heard. There we go.
Am I being heard now, Mr. Robert?
Yes, sir. You certainly are.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, so how long have you two been around Santa Cruz? And
off and on for about 8 months, a year, somewhere around there.
You've been playing guitar downtown?
Yes, sir. Yes.
And, Ms. Smith, you too, you play an instrument, or you just observe this character and his crazy stuff?
No, I'm just a roadie.
You're a roadie.
Right. She's a groupie with a plan.
I see. What have you two seen in Santa Cruz recently? Any experiences you want to pass on? I know I've talked a lot about what I call the city council police crackdown engineered by council members Coonerty, Robinson, and Matthews, and essentially involving a much higher proportion of police on the streets, more intensive use of the abusive and selectively enforced downtown ordinances. That's been my rap, but what's been your experience? Does it seem as mellow as 6 months ago? How does it seem to you?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely changed recently. Last night, you know, we were playing on the street, and the drummer, he was sitting down playing drums, and the policeman asked him to stand up, of course, you know, and so the policeman had left, but he couldn't play drums standing up, of course, so he sat back down and played a few more tunes, and then the policeman came back, and I believe they arrested him, actually.
Actually, you're talking about Officer Brand and George, the drummer, but he wasn't arrested, but he was definitely severely, he was threatened with a ticket, and he wasn't eventually ticketed because I believe Grinmaster Greg, as I call the lead, one of the lead guitarists, you know, had remonstrated with Officer Brandt about this because this, you're talking about the SAFE event, the Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, the musicians every Wednesday night that go out and play in front of New Leaf Market. And they've been doing that for, three and a half years almost now, 3 1/4 years. And part of what they're trying to take back public space. And I guess in a way, they do this by, you know, they're playing next to a building, which it's legal to play, but as Officer Brandt said, if you sit down next to a building, that's criminal, unless you supply your own chair. So we've got all musicians must henceforth bring their own chairs. Or if you are, of course, incapacitated by some emergency documentable condition, if you're watching a parade, if you are... That's about it. If you have a permit. So it's interesting that Officer Brandt, apparently on his own initiative, we're going to hear an interview about this later, took the initiative in starting to take back space for the police department, or if you will, for his sense of controlling those who are on the street who maybe he doesn't like the way they look, or maybe he feels that people aren't, you know, snapping too quickly enough, or he needs a little more discipline in the troops, but with the coming war against Iran, we all have to be ready to go out there and serve, you know. And of course, I'm being somewhat whimsical here, but not entirely. I'm not aware that this was justified by any kind of new mandate from his sergeant or anything else except his own desire to assert his authority. But I wasn't there. Now, you saw it. What did you think? Did you see this, Ms. Smith, yourself? Or?
Yeah, I was there.
What did you observe?
I observed the officer belittling and talking down to this man like he was a child and scolding him in front of everyone and embarrassing him. It was pretty weird.
Yeah. Had you seen that before in Santa Cruz happen between an officer and a member of the public?
Yes.
And when was the last time you saw that?
Oh, goodness, I don't know, a month ago, I guess.
What kind of thing did you see then?
It was pretty much... The officer was just yelling and scolding someone that maybe might have been misbehaving out there. I don't really... I just walked by and caught the argument.
Well, what happened to the rest of the crowd? I mean, did a crowd gather to observe this and to, you know, to support George the drummer, or were they in fact, did they feel George was out of line and the officer was doing the proper thing, or were they just scared of the whole situation? What actually happened? Because I know at these gatherings, it's usually quite a group of people, 10, 15, 20 people sometimes at this sort of weekly gathering. Do you remember what the reaction either of you was to by the crowd nearby, or if there was a crowd?
Yeah, it seemed like the crowd dissipated after the officer
had arrived.
Had arrived, yes.
So you think that perhaps were they intimidated, or did they feel that thank God the officer here to stop this drummer from sitting near a building?
I mean, yeah, I believe they were intimidated.
Did you stay?
Yeah, for a little while.
Were you intimidated?
No.
How about you, Ms. Smith?
No, I wasn't intimidated. I just felt sorry for George. You know, he really didn't. he really didn't deserve the treatment that he got. He's a grown man, and sitting down is not such a crime where he needed to be scolded in such a way and belittled.
Well, I'm going to start playing some street interviews now, and we'll stop, of course, before we do, actually, let's talk a little bit about Doo Doo Dump, which, of course, was the song you began this hour with. What is that Doo Doo Dump stuff? Are you criticizing the city council for taking off the agenda the self-cleaning toilet? Is that some sort of message here? What is this?
Well, it's actually a true story I wrote about a friend of mine last year. You know, he was they had closed the public restrooms downtown, and he was homeless. So he was looking for a place to do his business, man. So he went to an alley, you know, and when he did, you know, he got busted, you know, and I believe they took him to jail and such. I kind of elaborated a little on the lyrics, but you know, he was arrested.
Well, I know that in Santa Cruz there are zero restrooms open in town after 10 or 11 o'clock at night. Sometimes even after 9. I guess the metro closes and the bathroom that's next to the parking garage across from New Leaf Market closes. They've removed all the porta-potties. I guess you can go to a bar, in theory, if they'll let you in, if you don't get hassled, if you're over 18 or maybe over 21.
It's just like in the song, you know, usually you have to be a customer in order to use a restroom.
And even some coffee shops don't have restrooms, I mean, that you can use. I know, for example, the famous coffee roasting company downtown hasn't got a restroom the public can use. They tell you to go down the street to... I think it's the restroom around the corner that's kind of a rather seedy place, but it is available. I'm told the women's section isn't so bad. You ever use the women's restroom near the parking garage, Ms. Smith?
Yeah, it's not so bad.
Not bad. Well, the men's, they pulled out the urinal for about a month, and it was really kind of disgusting. But, you know, there is at least a one restroom or two restrooms. There's one near City Hall that's open during the day when the city offices are open, but... it's really kind of a public scandal that they're doing this. And at the same time, of course, as you point out, they go after people who have to urinate or defecate. You know, I mean, it's amazing. So, having ascertained the origins of Doo Doo Dump, let's. I want you two to stay on top of this, because if you have any thoughts about what you're hearing on these interviews, I want you to chime in. And also, folks out there, if you're interested in discussing any of this and giving us a different opinion. I know some people feel that they like the crackdown downtown. They feel that there, you know, there's been too much out of control behavior by some people in some points, and certainly not everybody is perfect down there. And there have been some instances of abuse and violence that happened, as there usually is in any urban area over a period of time. But I tend to, of course, my point of view has always been that this is a routine demand of merchants and police, because they want to create a certain kind of town, which unfortunately isn't so much that it's not violent, it's that it doesn't have visible homeless or visible poverty, and they're going to do all this without even opening up any public restrooms, because you see that draws people who haven't got the money to go in and pay for a, you know, a drink in a bar or a place in one of the restaurants that does have actually restaurants generally are required to have restrooms, but coffee shops are not. Anyway, here's a little of that, and I encourage you to give a call in. 427-3772 is the number here, 427-FRSC. We're at Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you want to catch me off air because you got something to say to me but you don't want to go on there, you can call me on the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's 423-HUFF, 423-4800. 1-800-273-3333. Or you can go onto your computer, perhaps, and go online if you've got that capability. It's www.huffsantacruz.org. There you can hear Mr. Smith's fine song, which will be archived probably within a day or two, barring technical problems, in our website. And it's under the name of our show, which, again, is Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. You've heard of Robespierre, the French Revolution. You've heard of the guy in the bathrobe. Well, it's Bathrobespierre. I so call myself because of... Actually, I was called that, but I now picked up the name because in honor of... sort of satirical honor of homeless people who have no legal place to sleep at night in this great progressive town, which has a place for, oh, I don't know, 150 people tonight, if you cram them in at the emergency shelter, and there are about 1,500 to 2,000 of them, and a $90 fine potentially awaiting at least 60 of them each month who are definitively ticketed. It sounds like we have a, or looks like we have a call coming in here. Let's see what we got here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Mr. Norse.
Hey, are you telling me that it's against the law to sit on the ground and play music?
It's against the law to sit within 14 feet of a building, which means that on most sidewalks throughout the city, with the exception of a few sidewalks on Pacific Avenue, you cannot sit down and play music, unless you're playing on a and sitting on a bench. And if you're playing on a bench, it is illegal to... perform on a bench, because that is what we call conduct on public property, violation of another ordinance.
You can't play music on sitting on a bench.
That is correct.
Bullshit.
Well,
and I thought you couldn't stand in front of a building either.
You can stand in front of a building. You even can lean on a building, though I believe that last night Coral, one of the singers, was leaning, actually kind of sort of leaning on the window with herself... sort of slightly, the one-half inch ridge of the window under the folds of her buttocks, and that was called sitting, even though she couldn't possibly sit there. She might lean there and scratch herself there, I suppose, but it didn't. But that was it's it gives a tool. It gives Officer Brandt and fellow officers the ability to selectively decide who they want to harass. They're certainly not going to harass. And haven't harassed tourists generally. I think, of course, need now a Brandt patrol to go after Brandt with, with gun and lawyers, but no, with camera, video camera, camcorder, and tape recorder to observe just how much Officer Brandt actually goes after those who are, should we say, better healed.
So this is all in respect for the merchants, because if it's next to the building, obviously means that. It's hassling the merchants, or it's not sitting on public property. Well, here in this case, you were saying even a bench, which is public property, you can't even sit on a bench and play music.
Well, let me clarify that, because I want to make sure I don't give misinformation. It may be possible to sit and play music on a bench, provided you don't have a display device out.
Yeah, so you can't receive any money.
God, you cannot
detail,
have a you can't have a device such as a cup, a cap, a guitar case, a table. That
soliciting,
would,
then, in other words.
No, you can. This is another exception. You can solicit as a musician. You simply can't have a display device that does it. So in theory, you could be sitting on a public bench. You could have a circle. Chalked on the sidewalk. Of course, it would be illegal to chalk on the sidewalk, but let's suppose that some criminal came by and helped you out and then left and said, put your money here, and people could put their money there, and you would be, in fact, legally playing on the sidewalk. Or even more specifically, you could actually just put some change down on the sidewalk in front of you.
These guys are acting like clowns. They might as well have red noses and white face and silly big shoes. I mean, they're acting like clowns.
You're calling the furious men clowns?
We should have people out doing parodies on them, running around in clown suits and going, you can't sit here.
You know, we actually, when they threatened to pass these ordinances way back in 2002, actually to extend them, we had people running around issuing kind of bogus tickets, and I believe Grant Wilson, who does Art and Revolution, had a police uniform, and he went around giving people sitting tickets.
Oh, it's insane.
It was very funny, except, of course, it's not very funny, because the city council under Riley and Porter and Matthews and Rotkin passed and then reaffirmed this law, plus other worse laws, and then buffed up the police department and then gave them orders without any public hearing to go out and increase the crackdown downtown.
Well,
now,
about it is we're making fun of the stupidity of it. What we're doing.
Oh, for sure. And I think really that's a good way to go in part. I mean, another part is to go after, to go after them by letting the tourists see what's happened. You could turn it into a tourist pleaser. Somebody should start, when a cop is giving a ticket, someone else should sit down and start playing music and invite the tourists over to contribute money to this situation. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like an incredible circus. Ms. Smith, did you have a comment you wanted to make? Sound like you maybe were... You had something you wanted to say, or no? Just some whispering going on here with Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I'm not quite sure what they're planning.
I appreciate you clarifying the madness. Although it just seems even more mad now that it's clearer. But
it is.
I just can't believe it.
You know, before you go, caller, I recognize you. You're Valerie, who does your. Does a similar event on Tuesday night every week where you actually feed people and you play music.
This guy knows my voice too well.
I do. I know it quite well. And I'm wondering if this activity on Wednesday night is going to impact your behavior next Tuesday, where I understand you may be planning some kind of a demonstration going to the community room of the police department. I understand that's kind of in the offing, but
if there's an event going on where people would like to get involved and there's something going on that night, I'd like to let people know and, you know, maybe encourage talking about possibly a parade down there to say, what? You don't want to encourage supporting people who are struggling on the street? Excuse me? But, the one thing is we do not go to the building like they do. They're the ones who have changed the positioning and have gone up against
the
building.
I have bad news for you, Valerie. It's illegal to be within 10 feet of the enclosed area between Alfresco's and Cafe Campesina.
Although I've had cops come up and never say that so far.
Right.
So,
well, it's illegal to sit down or to... have a display device, I believe, within 10 feet of that area. Although, yeah, I think that's the case.
Anyone tell us not to stand there.
I know that you work with Huff and you give out flyers and literature, and indeed this thing I'm now looking at, the Deadly Downtown Ordinances, which actually has the wording of these strange laws.
Yeah.
I appreciate your calling in. Is there? I guess the real question again. I ask you again. Do you think you're going to be intimidated on Tuesday next week when you come back and do your meal?
Well, unfortunately, that's their job, is to intimidate, so that's a possibility that they may do a little intimidating. I think that I'm a little confused of how I would deal with it, because I think that it's madness, and I would probably look at them and say, are you nuts? But I might get a ticket for that, so I don't know how.
It's not illegal to accuse them of some mental problem or a political difficulty, but, you know, if you refuse to... to obey a law, in theory, and often in practice, you can be ticketed. I appreciate your call. Call in again, if you'd like.
Yeah, thanks a lot for clarifying that.
All right. I don't know if I clarified it. I know that I did talk to two of the performers after this all happened, and we tried to do a little role-playing on the streets as what to do if an officer arrived like Officer Brand, how to deal with the situation. Other than simply follow every order a police officer decides to give you, like you're in some kind of... shoot those Iraqis? Sure. What next, Sarge? You know, I mean, that sort of thing. Move here, move there, you know, take this dressing down, you know, take it like you're a 5-year-old, that sort of thing. I think it's a really difficult and delicate situation, and there are various ways to address this. In fact, there are seminars, Know Your Rights seminars done by the Free School. You go online to Free School, FreeSkool. Jason and Wes do a great... Know Your Rights seminar. The problem with their seminar is that it has to do really with what do you do if a cop comes up to you and wants to interrogate you or harass you, say, am I free to go, and you walk away. But if you're a musician, you don't want to walk away. You want to stay. So it becomes a more difficult situation, and we're kind of puzzling out how to deal with it. We have a caller, perhaps the police department, calling in to give us some suggestions. Let's see here. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with us. How's it going?
What's
out there?
What's up, Robert?
Who's this?
It's Madison.
Madison, have you got a guitar on you today, perhaps?
No more COINTELPRO. No, I don't play the guitar. I got friends that play.
All right, so what do we do about the police harassing musicians downtown, Madison?
Are they bothering them? It's like we want an art town, not a drug town. They're trying to make it a drug town.
Well, talk is... We think the police are trying to make it a drug town? I thought they were supposed to be cleaning up the streets. What are you saying, Madison?
Well, the FBI is selling more drugs here than any of the hippies I ever knew in the day.
Now, I don't want to hear these FBI conspiracy theories. I want to hear what to do. Wait a minute. I want to know what to do to protect our street performers. You're a longtime resident. What can street performers do to, you know, stop this foolish police activity?
The former DA's wife and I were having dinner the other night.
And I don't want any name dropping of any sort either. I want to get some straight answers from you, Madison.
He gets robbed by some scumbag who's been on my street, too.
Oh, dear. Well, look, why don't you call back? But when you have an answer, I want to hear it. Phone number to call is 427-3772. I gave you short shrift there, Madison, but I am going to try to keep you on topic, as Mayor Riley and Shadow Mayor Rotkin like to say at the city council to me when they think I'm straying from the topic. I'm going to turn now to a few... Oh, dear. Sounds like a cell phone is about to attack us here. We'll wait on that one. Here we go. Here's something from the street. I take that back. Here's a caller. Hi there. You're on Free Radio.
Sorry, we got cut off, but this guy got robbed.
Well, we got
then
cut off.
The cops got a hold of him, and he kind of has started...
Madison, we got cut off because I cut you off. I want you to talk about the subject I'm talking about.
Well, isn't that what we're talking about, cops?
No, we're talking about street performers and the problems they're having downtown with police harassment. What can they do about it?
Well, this happened in the 80s, and that's why we have the regulations for street performers.
Say that again?
Because there was one old New Yorker who couldn't have any fun, and she started bitching at everybody for no reason, and they should have just told her to shut up.
Madison,
I mean, that's who started it. She's dead now, and
Madison,
no one cares about her.
Madison, hold it, Madison. I mean, you know, actually, I'm sure you're actually recounting events that probably happened. But, again, it's kind of one of these free riffs that most of us can't follow. Draw yourself back to the topic at hand, the street performers.
That's why tourists come, for the art and the drugs.
Well,
and
what about the frilly clothing and the fine hats and the shoes at Bunny's Shoes?
Exactly.
Come on
they
now.
You're lucky those people are there. Those people are a built-in security force.
There you go. Well, who's
they know everybody. They know the problem people. Blah, blah.
Who are you talking about?
And they're not.
Wait, Madison. Who are you talking about? Who knows everybody? Who are you talking about?
I'm the top arts planner probably in the entire United States of America.
Madison, again, braggery will get you nowhere. Let's get back to the street performers here now.
That's what I'm talking about, the arts here. Those people are in Santa Cruz, and it's why people get in their car to drive over here to go and pay for your $80 bottle of wine at Swoof or whatever the name of that restaurant is and all the other restaurants.
Well, I appreciate that, but I agree with you in many respects. But my question is, what do we do to support these street performers?
We should smash on the pavement like we did while we were having dinner last night.
You're not following, Madison. What do we do?
Well, you need to get together every musician in the community and every artist and go down there and start banging the drums right at the city council, bang the drums up and down the street. It's like I'm moving a $700 million arts company because this is a drug town and they have no clue how to build an arts town.
Right, well, I appreciate that suggestion, Madison. I'm going to move on, but it's been put out on the air. So actually it has been done. There were musicians that went in force to the 2002 council meeting. They were shunted off to the downtown commission, which in itself was shunted off to side meetings between subcommittees. And when I tried to record those meetings, Councilmember Ed Porter had me arrested and barred from the meeting. So I was only able to provide our audience with a small bit of the tape of that meeting. Not that a great deal was meaningfully discussed there. But so going to the council I don't think is necessarily a bad idea. But as I often said, we have to get our own power together first. And that's why we have... songs like Doo Doo Dump and other fine matters.
I got another one to play for you in a little while, too.
All right, well, that sounds good. Let's hear some street interviews here.
So here we are about 5 to 11 on March 9th with a gang of munchers here at the bench right outside the old theater building near East Meets West on Walnut Pacific, talking with...
talking with?
Me.
You're a man with some fine tattoos and some great shoes.
A couple days ago, actually.
What did we talk about?
Me getting a ticket for camping.
And has there been any further developments? You've been left alone by the Polizei?
Yes, pretty much.
Do you think that indicates they like your fancy pants with these great leather thingies on them, or is it rather that you've been more circumspect in your behavior?
I've been hitting the lunch shop. I found a better place to camp.
I see. And what kind of reports have you gotten from others on the street recently in the last day or two? Has things been pretty mellow, quiet?
Yeah, it's been pretty quiet.
Now, here's a woman who believes in the International Declaration of Human Rights. You're a human rights advocate.
I am.
And would you say that, how are human rights faring in Santa Cruz?
I think the progress is going forward slowly but surely. As each one is true to their own self, we go upward and onward.
So there's no need for an international commission to start monitoring police abuse in Santa Cruz?
I think they've abandoned the abuse and they're quite disappointed in themselves, but I see a little bit of chagrin on their faces, and all humility is always good.
So you don't see a problem with a recent crackdown downtown?
I must have missed it. I was sitting under the trees in the
park. Oh! Were you sitting illegally under the tree?
And actually, I'm going to move on to a little more dated tape, because this tape, in part, has been played before, and I don't want to disappoint our longtime listeners. This one, I don't think, has. So let's go back a little bit to Valentine's Day and hear this. It's about 12:05 on February 14th, Valentine's Day, downtown on a sunny day, heading for a reported police harassment incident on Pacific Avenue. Well, apparently we're too late for the incident, but what happened, gentlemen?
Well, I was standing over here at Spirit Engine. Two cops rolled up.
In front of New Leaf Market?
Right, and they saw this guy walking around the corner. He's on a court probation, so they can legally search him.
Mm-hmm.
And they searched him, and they had to send three officers on a homeless man on the corner over here.
And what kind of criminal appurtenances did they find?
Nothing. They let him go. They just left just now.
How long did the incident take?
I would say a good 20 minutes.
20 minutes to search one person?
Right.
Would you say that's accurate, sir?
No, I just saw a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Anything of note that hasn't been mentioned?
No, just three cops over there.
Okay, thank you. So we've been talking with
Nicholas Veranda.
And Nicholas, you spoke last night at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting during the oral communications period?
Yes, I did.
And so you said something disturbed you about something you read in the Sentinel?
Yes, my friend was on the front page.
Perhaps commending him.
Day, sir.
All right, man. Commending him for his struggle as a homeless individual and being able to survive and maintain a decent attitude.
Well, the way the system is run.
In other words, what did you notice on the front page? How was your friend portrayed?
He was sleeping in the bushes.
And they portrayed him, perhaps, if I remember the headline properly, as a homeless problem of some kind?
Yes, I saw him today, and he was very upset that they didn't go up to him and ask him if he can take a picture of him. They just went up and took a picture.
Well, they can take a picture of anybody in public, but the question is, why are they... Yeah, they can take pictures of anybody they want.
They can take a picture of you.
Yeah, you, me. The only thing that is questionable is what the police are doing so for political purposes and keeping them in files, but newspapers or private citizens can take photos of anybody anytime they want.
Right. Yeah, well, they're going to lose at the end.
But the point is, I think that the Sentinel described behaviors downtown that were somehow criminal or problematic, and they showed two photos of homeless people, one on the front page and one on the back page, and sort of as some indication of what they were talking about, namely that homeless people trying to survive because they have to sleep are a problem, right?
There's too many people without, and it's not going to go on too much longer the way it is.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I don't know what's going to happen, but it don't look pretty.
Thank you, Nicholas. And we're here at the SAFE event at 7:10 on Valentine's Day, talking with the man about a guitar. Actually, there are several guitars here. Grandmaster Greg. Greg, how are the police treating folks on the streets? Any comments? I hear rumors of increased police... let me put it differently. Increased police depredations?
I can't speak to that. I can just see, from what I've seen, just the previous evening, it seems as if they were actually stepping up enforcement of anything they could find for people who seem to be sitting around.
Really? Like, for instance, what did you notice?
Bikes. Just their bikes next to them. They weren't on their bikes. They weren't riding them. They were just sitting next to them. And it was at night, by the way. I think
criminally seated next to a bike at night, eh?
And it seems like. And they were cited for something. I'm not quite sure what they were cited for. Maybe not having lights on.
Those bikes might have been stolen. Terrorist bikes?
I have no idea. They might have been.
Exactly.
It seemed like they were being cited.
Jumping the gun on our police force, aren't you, Grandmaster Greg?
No, I'm not. I spoke to someone else next to me, and he said that, well, it's because everybody who's downtown who looks poor is getting shook down and rolled.
That old chestnut's constantly used by the wretched of the streets to justify any kind of paranoia against our good police officers.
Well, they were trying to clean up the streets, it looks like.
Exactly, trying to end bad behavior downtown. Now, you've seen a lot of bad behavior downtown, right? People spitting on the sidewalk, abusing passersby, aggressively panhandling, sleeping anywhere and everywhere, poo-pooing and pee-peeing. Come on.
Well, I don't know about that, but they could get a toilet and then people could have one to use.
Well, there's a toilet right around the corner. It's open until 9 o'clock, or is it 10 o'clock? Anyway,
you have to hold
it. Here are some police officers guarding our gates. There's Sergeant Flippo on his bicycle. He's a man who's trying to help out. Let's have a hand for Sergeant Flippo. All right. Go, Sergeant. Get those homeless. You can do it. All right, then. So,
well, either way, it just seems to me that there was, in fact, some sort of a program set up here to clean up the streets, and it appeared to be targeting what we might call street youth and their bicycles. Even though they weren't necessarily on their bikes, but they are congregated, and they seem to be looking for any kind of infraction relative to what their bikes
How
were.
How many police officers were doing this?
Well, the one I saw was two. Right on here in corner of Borders Books.
This is last night, Tuesday night of the city council meeting?
Just before I ran over to the city council to hear what was going on.
Just a chance to speak or sing your piece. There's another police officer on a motorcycle. That makes three in the last 20 seconds.
Don't you feel safe?
I feel much safer, yes. I better check these guys. I will follow these police officers down to make sure they don't get attacked.
Oh, shit.
Thank you, Greg.
And that, of course, was an interview from way back around Valentine's Day. And if you have any comments, 427-3772 is the number to call in. It sounds like we may have another number coming up from that man with the guitar, Mr. Smith. What do you got for us, Mr. Smith?
All right. This is a song I wrote not too long ago. I call it the California song.
Okay.
We celebrate 420 every day, and flowers still bloom in January. All the young fine girls and school that's in scantily clad as summer begins. We got tweakers, junkies, and crooked cops. They'll check you 215 if you get caught with pot. Well, here's your car back, sir. Have a nice day. Just take that pound and a half and roll away in California, eh? Mendocino bud just blows my mind. It's sticky and sweet and very kind in California, eh? In California, eh?
song again?
That's the California song.
All right, and that's by Mr. Smith.
His lovely wife, Mrs. Smith.
Mrs. Smith, I didn't hear anything from Mrs. Smith. What is that, this, the inspiration coming
through
the air?
Yeah, she's the inspirational.
All right, I expect to hear some real solid voice activity pretty soon here.
I'm trying to get her, trying to get her vocally trained.
Right on. Okay, well, if anybody has any thoughts on anything you've heard so far or some additions, news briefs we should know about what's going on downtown, the number to call is 427-3772. A couple of quick announcements as to what's coming down the pike. I mentioned before that there's an event coming up on Tuesday, it seems. I want to get this group right. I want to get the name of this properly said, so let me make sure I don't screw it up. There is a group of conservative residents, city bureaucrats, and some police officers who form a group called the, I don't get the exact name of this group, it's the Santa Cruz Neighbors. And they meet every month, at least in a public meeting. They may have private meetings as well. And apparently they meet in the community room of the police department, which is open to the public. So don't be intimidated by the fact that you have protection by having police officers nearby. And that community room of the police department, it's about a block from the Loudoun-Nelson Center, if you know where that is, all of you folks out there. And they're planning a meeting on the 20th of March, which is next Tuesday at 7 o'clock in the evening, open to the public. And what I find interesting, I thought this next meeting might be worth attending, and I brought the issue to the Santa Cruz Huff chapter, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, yesterday. And we actually voted to tentatively schedule a gathering there and even possibly some food there to encourage homeless people who are hungry people, homeless or not, who might want to come around and have something to eat while they're dealing with what seems like, frankly, to me, misguided at best, bigoted and discriminatory more likely, and vicious at worst, behavior by the Santa Cruz Neighbors. Now, why do I say this? Well, let me read you a little from the minutes of their last meeting. Here we go. This is their last meeting. It was February 20th from 7 to 9. Present were Mike Bethke. This is the one fellow who opposed Measure K, which is the measure that would have made recreational marijuana the lowest priority, and the city, rather than letting it proceed because it was voted in by 63% of the electorate, is taking it to court to stop it from being put into effect, at least as far as the Oversight Commission goes. Mr. Bethke is a nice guy. I mean, I've seen him at city council, nothing against him as a person, but his perspective, I don't think, is actually, you know, in line with 21st century America or 21st century Santa Cruz, frankly. That doesn't mean it's wrong. I mean, everybody has the right to their views. I happen to think people who favor criminalization of marijuana, the drug war, more support for police department activity in this regard as terribly, tragically wrong. And they do a great deal of damage, particularly when they're positions of power, as unfortunately we have a lot of people in those positions now, and the politicians who listen to them are even worse because they know better, but they aren't doing anything about it. Anyway, the way the minutes read from this last meeting of the Santa Cruz Neighbors, Mike Bethke opened the meeting and introduced guest speakers Julie Hendy, graffiti abatement, and Keith Holtaway, executive director of the Downtown Association. Officials attending were Lynn Robinson, City Council, Mark Dettel, Public Works, Chief Howard Scarry, that's the chief of our police department, officers Mark Eveleth, Colleen McMahon, Butch Baker, and Jim Howes, and some Santa Cruz neighbors, Debbie Elson, Mary Miller, J.D. Sotelo, and they say approximately 40 attendees. However, I talked to someone who attended, and she said it was less than that. But still, a larger group than Huff can get together, I can tell you that right now. It's interesting that the people that attended, I mean, Scarry is the police chief that promoted his own guidelines on political surveillance and had them passed through the mayor without any public process. So we now have, they can surveil you based on these guidelines without even the restrictions that are on the San Francisco police. And they did that last year, you remember, a year ago actually, when they did the DIY last night political surveillance, when they Hanrick undercover officers come into the peaceful parade and to the planning department and the planning section of that parade. And it was quite a scandal, and apparently the city's chief officials were unfazed by that scandal. Howard Scarry, he's responsible at the top of the police department for that whole business. Officer Mark Eveleth. Officer Eveleth was accused by UCSC students and observers, and I was present when this happened, of being a person who assaulted UC students at the UCSC Tent University that happened about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, when Rotkin was mayor. This was a group of people that did a week-long campout. Actually, it began as a campout, and the police drove them away, even though they were peaceful. They were intending to establish an open space for the community. They were doing so on land that was not being used. It was just, again, like with Officer Brandt, it seems to me, last night, the assertion of authority becomes the all-important factor. Not any real considerations of public health and safety, but the attempt to usurp the community commons, to take what is public area and turn it into a private area ruled by the opinions and rules of a few. Eveleth, I am told, assaulted a student or actually member of the community up there, and as far as I know, has never been held responsible. The students who... All the students arrested in that, they were brutalized. We did a long discussion of this on Free Radio, played tapes. They were dragged away. They were put in pain compliance holds, screaming, as they simply tried to assemble beyond 8 o'clock at night, when apparently, even though that many of them were adults, the university and the city police and the university police decided it was beyond their bedtime. Officer Eveleth was one of that group. Butch Baker, we've had a lot of discussion of. I've actually successfully sued Butch Baker for false arrest. He arrested me downtown near the very New Leaf Market area, which we've been talking about, where Officer Brandt is attempting to harass musicians. I had a table set up where I was petitioning people to stop the privatization of that area. Just as now the city is now moving behind closed doors to privatize Scope and Scribner Park, which happened last Tuesday, 2 days ago at the city council meeting. So 5 years ago in 2002, Baker enforced a false arrest generated by merchant Matisse Selman to drag me away. They dragged me away, but a couple of years later they had to pay some money for it because it was a false arrest. Baker is also notorious for a decade before that being accused by no less than 10 women of sexual abuse in searches. And the city council first set up a committee to examine it, and then when all the protesters went home 2 weeks later, under city manager Dick Wilson, city manager for life, dispersed this committee, dissolved it, and Butch Baker was given a clean bill of health, and he's now become sergeant. In fact, was named officer of the year the next year, I believe, after he was accused of all these inappropriate behaviors. Again, Baker is a sort of an amiable guy. So are they all amiable guys. But the question is, what's really going on in the police force? These kinds of people are going to the Santa Cruz neighbors meetings and advising the community on how to deal with, well, that's what we're going to get to next. What are they talking about at these meetings? Well, another person they have at this meeting, or they did last 20th of February, was Jim Howes. Now, Jim Howes is an officer, been an officer for 20-odd years. Apparently, he doesn't mind not moving up in the bureaucracy, according to Vice Chief Vogel, who I talked to, Deputy Chief Vogel. He was given an award recently by the Santa Cruz City Council as a Hero of the Year. He's no hero in my book because of actions he's taken against homeless people, because of his discriminatory treatment of homeless organizations, because of his assertions of special privilege for the police on the sidewalks when the police, for example, claim they have the right to set down a table in the public space where the community does not. And that happened 2003. An innocent activity. They're engaging in charity activities, which I have no objection to. But if they're going to go arrest other people for doing the same thing and then claim because they have guns and badges and are paid public officials, they can do that without special dispensation, then they're very wrong. And we attempted to get them to stop. They refused. Then we attempted to get them cited. They refused. Then we attempted to have the officers who refused to cite themselves cited for refusing to do their duty, making false reports and so forth. none of that happened, and none of that was reported in the papers. Actually, 3 years later, it was. It was reported in the papers by the Good Times because of an interesting parallel event that happened. Anyway, Officer Howes, I've talked about him on the air, was given the special award by City Council. And he's most notorious for me for going door-to-door and trying to drum up anti-homeless sentiment among the neighbors to set up little signs that say you can't park your vehicle here after midnight. Why people would need to reserve spaces after midnight other than drive away people who have no place to go from using an empty space, I don't know. I mean, I can understand that you don't want people parking all day in front of your house when you have to use the area. But after midnight, I think not. It's already illegal to sleep in your vehicle, to park your vehicle, and it was explicitly stated it was a measure to deal with camping and homeless problems. Howes was originally behind one of those moves, and, of course, these people like Robinson, Lynn Robinson, the council member, who will be apparently at this next meeting, are going to be are behind sort of similar activity, at least seem to be sympathetic. Keith Holtaway was invited to attend and spoke at the last meeting. And this really is what persuaded Huff members to suggest a protest or at least a presence at this coming March 20th, Tuesday, 7 o'clock meeting at the police station community room, where there may be some refreshments both which we provide and also which, who knows, maybe the Santa Cruz neighbors will be providing a little something for people to eat. Keith Holtaway is the executive director of the Downtown Association. According to the minutes, he reported on the environment of Pacific Avenue regarding the aggressive panhandling and antisocial criminal behavior that has been occurring in the area. Now, he's not talking about these characters who walk around the streets giving out, get your silver down the street here, come out and get our silver. And you see them on the corner of Church and Pacific across from New Leaf Market, you know, like the telemerchants or whatever of our time. He's talking about, of course, poor people who have a sign that says, need spare change. These are the aggressive panhandling. Because in Santa Cruz, aggressive panhandling is defined as asking anything after dark, however peacefully, in terms of a request for money or anything of worth, or having a sign that says that. That is illegal in Santa Cruz after dark. That's the aggressive panhandling. Not, I'm sure, that he's talking about, because there are some panhandlers that are aggressive. There are some panhandlers that are abusive. I mean, no question about it. It happens. But we have laws that criminalize everybody and then let the police walk up and down choosing and picking who they want to ticket, harass, or drive away. Anyway, Holtaway said, the minutes to this previous meeting note, he's going to give efforts by the Downtown Association to make it to make Pacific Avenue environment viable and inviting to visitors. He gave a background on the Downtown Association and its mission statement to provide unique leadership, effective leadership, in order to create, promote, and sustain downtown as a unique and economically viable business, entertainment, social, and cultural center. He said he asked two things of citizens, Keith Holtaway did. Come downtown, be a part of Pacific Avenue, and take it back. More people using Pacific Avenue will make a difference and create a positive atmosphere and act as a deterrent. Now, I agree with Keith here. I think the more people who come downtown, the better. And if, in terms of a deterrent, it'll be a deterrent, I hope, to police misconduct. It'll be a deterrent to gang activity. And I don't see too much gang activity on Pacific Avenue, frankly. And it'll be a deterrent to, you know, to people acting out or feeling they can prey on other people when there's less people there. So I'm all for Mr. Holtaway's first point, but his second point disturbs me. He asks that citizens not hand out money to the homeless. He states that panhandling is a commercial endeavor. It's a business. He wants visitors to stop perpetuating that business. If they feel they must give money to help, there are plenty of agencies in Santa Cruz that they could use the money in a much more productive manner. For more information, go to excellent website at www.downtownsantacruz.com. There's an extensive question and answer with a good discussion on the homeless, youth authority, social services, and all those factors that make downtown an excellent candidate for the existing social problems. And that is what disturbed me. Am I getting carried away by being upset about what Holtaway said? I mean, here's a merchant. What would you expect a merchant to say? What do you think, Mr. Smith? Any comment?
Yes.
I'm putting you on the spot, so don't you have to say anything. But I mean, if you get a reaction to this, I'd like to know what it is. Do you have any reaction to this?
No, not really.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, perhaps it's kind of what we can expect from Keith Holtway, who used to be the owner of Pizza My Heart, by the way.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you can expect a merchant to not want any money to go anywhere else. You know?
Well, I think it's just this. It's actually, I think it's different than that. I think merchants, some people have the idea that homeless people ask for money and then run off and spend it on heroin, methadrine, alcohol, you know, and marijuana or whatever. And some of the money, no doubt, does go there. Just like and money from ordinary people and ordinary businesses goes there. But I think it's my understanding that homeless people have a lot of other needs, which, for example, aren't met by social service agencies. I mean, it's the most obvious need, and one that usually can't be satisfied by panhandling, is shelter. I mean, first of all, you got to find some way to pay them $90 tickets you get for sleeping outside. You know, that's the cost of a sleeping ticket under the municipal code 6.36010A. Now, it's true, you can spend like $25 to $50 for community service and go do 8 hours of community service to make up for the sleep that you did, in theory. You know, I mean, if you want. I mean, the whole thing is, of course, preposterous because it's unconstitutional for the police to be arresting people, not just, duh, they got no place to go. So what are they supposed to do, stay awake all night? Are you actually encouraging methadrine use? Are you actually encouraging people to drink coffee all night? I mean, do you want people walking around at all hours? I wouldn't mind having more people around at night. I think it might be a good thing. But, you know, it's a ridiculous idea. What it really is it gives the police a tool to say, get the fuck out of town. Although they don't, I'm not saying our police generally say it in that way to people. So this meeting on Tuesday of the downtown Santa Cruz neighbors is happening at 7 o'clock at the police station, which is on Center Street. It's about a block from Laurel. And I believe that there's going to be flyers out talking about it. It'll probably be a notice posted on indybay.org, indybay.org/Santa Cruz. That's the Indie Bay website or the Santa Cruz Indie Media website. You can get more information on it there, and I'll be talking about it on Sunday, assuming that the plans come to fruition, which I suspect they will, because we've already gotten an okay from food activist Joe Schultz that he will be supplying food for this, no doubt, having mentioned it on free radio. He'll probably be stoned by all the enraged business owners who somehow feel that this is sort of enabling, homeless drug use or something. I think not. And I think, you know, we really have to start looking at the issue in a different way. And maybe the presence of homeless people actually talking to these people at the meeting might be helpful. More likely it won't in terms of their learning anything, but it also might tell them that there are people watching them who are not too terribly happy with what they're doing, which they probably know already anyway. But I think power, frankly, does nothing as our friend Frederick Douglass used to say, concedes nothing without a demand. And unless you make your demands, they will roll over you. And you can make your demands in a nice voice, and you can be very reasonable and diplomatic. But unless you have a lot of people behind you, you're not going to get too much attention. And, of course, that's one of the weaknesses street performers and other homeless people have, is it's really, you know, it's much more tempting to try to form your liaisons, your settlements, your arrangements. Oh, this police officer is my friend. He's not going to bother me. You know, I mean, we're good friends. I mean, we can make it come out to an understanding. Yeah, I'll go after the other people, the bad home. You know, take the Jews. Don't take me. I mean, take the socialists. Don't take me. You know, take those other people. And so, I mean, it's easy for me to mock it because I don't live outside. You know, I mean, I'm indoors, and I don't claim to speak for people who live outside. This is just one person's perspective. You might want to give me your perspective, listeners, and if you want, you can call in. There's a phone number, 427-3772, 427-FRSC is the phone number. So anyway, this next Tuesday there may well be, and probably will be, a gathering at the 7 o'clock meeting of the Santa Cruz Neighbors at the police department. We may actually do a march or a stroll or a waddle, for those of us who are getting hefty. From the Santa Cruz New Leaf Market area over to the police station where we will chow down and try to educate the residents, the neighbors, and even the service providers, because at this meeting there's supposed to be Ken Cole, the Homeless Service Center Executive Director, Danielle Long, who will tell you if you're crazy downtown and advise you of all the wonderful services for you, and I also Sergeant Eric Seeley, who's the Homeless Resource Officer. Interesting, it's a resource officer without any resources. I always find it an interesting contradiction in terms. I mean, I suppose in some ways he may have some limited resources, but in terms of basic resources like shelter, there are no resources. And that's the big lie that always pisses me off in Santa Cruz that you don't see in any of the stories by Shanna Banana McCord of the Sentinel. You don't see it acknowledged by Mayor Riley, though she knows it full well. All she will tell you is, you know, we're doing the best we can, and, you know, it's a national problem, and, you know, we could really do better. You know, we really could. In the meantime, do you favor reducing the fine so people don't have to pay $90 a night, maybe back to the original fine of $54 a night from 1999? No, I couldn't do that. Why? Oh, we can't really talk about that now. Well, how about enforcing the federal law that as was passed recently by the Federal Court of Appeals, says you don't arrest a homeless person without there being a shelter bed possible for them, like in Los Angeles and San Diego and now on the books in Richmond. Well, how about that? I mean, that's actually being done in other cities. Well, we can't do that either. Well, why not? I mean, as Santa Cruz special, is it going to be free from the million-dollar lawsuits that are already moving with success through Los Angeles and San Diego? At least through Los Angeles, and apparently with success in San Diego, because they're moving to stop the arrests. Well, we follow the advice of our city attorney, John Barisoni. Well, what is that advice? Well, we can't tell you. Well, didn't you get a memo on that? Yes, I did. Well, can you read it to us? No, it's a confidential memo. Oh, well, isn't the city attorney paid with city funds? And doesn't this affect all of us? Aren't we going to have to pay this city attorney if he has to go into court to defend us against, you know, a lawsuit by people who are saying you're arresting us for violating, you know, basic right to, you know, to survive at night, to be free from cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment? You know, we can't really talk about that, and I can't tell you why. Well, how about going to the city council's closed session and saying, let's open up this opinion, because you can do that by a majority vote. No, I'm not going to do that. Well, why won't you do that, Mayor Riley? I can't tell you that. It really kind of makes
seems
you feel
kind of evasive, man.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it seems like you're in a labyrinth. And don't forget, you have to be closer to the mic if you want them to hear you. Yeah,
that sounds kind of evasive.
It does, because I think you see, really, I think these people are fundamentally it's a combination of indifference, and they've reached the decision that there is no political traction on the homeless issue and no constituency that really cares about it. And there are other constituencies like merchants, staff, bureaucrats who want to run the homeless out of the parking garages and so forth, and have done so with this new 15-minute law. You can't enter the parking lot garages at all unless you are a person with a vehicle or a bicycle, and you can't stay there for more than 15 minutes unless you're a parking garage attendant, a worker who works there. Special privileges, you know, for those who actually are city employees. They get to use the public spaces that were supposedly set up for all of us. Now, admittedly, they have a job to do there, but they're using the excuse of homeless campers to run everybody off. So it's more the idea that the city exists somehow to serve the needs of the bureaucracy, the prejudice of the conservative residents, the fears of the merchants, and this is what we see happening. And it just gets my goat.
I was told there's a smoking ban down on the mall. Is that correct?
I believe that. No, there's not a smoking ban on the mall, but there's something about being a certain distance away from businesses, and there is smoking ban now in San Lorenzo Park and several other parks, without any kind of discussion with the smokers, without any reasonable accommodation for them. I don't like smoking.
I don't smoke myself, but I figure, you know, if you want to smoke, you should be allowed to smoke.
Well, there are people who have conditions like asthma, and there's controversy about secondhand smoke. I know people who, you know, who say it doesn't have any impact at all. Others who say there's established studies. But secondhand smoke outdoors has a lot less impact, I would imagine, than, let's say, automobile exhausts and things of that sort. They're not talking about banning automobiles from the downtown. Heavens forfend. I mean, that might stop all kinds of cancers and all kinds of, you know, of asthmatic problems. But that's not about to happen. You know, instead you have this kind of tight-assed, picayune, more rules for the police, no dogs off-leash shit that's coming down, and is essentially, it pumps more power into the police department, just as Bush's Patriot Act, is signing statements, his Iraqi war and his forthcoming Iranian war are pumping more power into the executive. And you know, it's just, it seems to me to be bad news, and it seems to me to be, you know, to be something that people have to oppose, which, by the way, is another thing that's happening on Friday night. I want to point out that Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, I didn't talk about this yet, did I?
No.
He's coming to Santa Cruz, and he's going to be at 7 o'clock speaking of Kresge College. It's free from 7 to 9. That's tomorrow night. He's the guy who co-founded Food Not Bombs. And Food Not Bombs, as you know, it's a Santa Cruz organization. But up in San Francisco, it was much more militant. They did protests. And here it's somewhat militant at times. They come and provide food for political events. They did parades downtown. They led anti-war rallies. And he was beaten up. Gosh, I don't know how many times. He was sent to the hospital at least half a dozen times by the police, arrested over 100 times. He's a jolly, friendly, articulate fellow who's gone across Africa and Asia, or Europe at least, and I think he's been also in South America. I'm not sure about that one. Encouraging people to set up these essentially self-help Food Not Bombs groups that are vegetarian groups that use food that's discarded by the major, you know, groceries and so forth, to turn it into stuff people can use and enjoy. And also, they make poverty visible. They show what's happening on the streets by saying, you know, no, things are not rosy. No, it's not just all, you know, hearts and flowers like Officer Brandt and the downtown Santa Cruz neighbors would like to have you believe. You know, it's not just something you can be swept away by the decree of Vice Mayor Coonerty and this behind-closed-doors sweep crackdown that he has mandated through the city manager's office and the police department. At 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Then at 11:30, I believe, on Saturday, there's going to be an anti-war gathering in which Representative, I'm against the war, but I'm going to vote for the military appropriation, Farr, will be present to give you his curious position. And a lot of people here like Farr because he does vote against the supplemental military appropriation, the military appropriation which was specifically for Iraq. But there's plenty of money for Iraq that goes out in the general military appropriation, which is huge and bloated. So that's happening at 11:30 for those who want to come to the county building and check out that scene. You can also then, if you want to be a part of the planning for the Santa Cruz Neighbors demonstration, you can come to the Human Rights Organization meeting that will be meeting after that, the demonstration against Farr, I should say, the demonstration against the war, and also against Farr's failure, trying to hold Farr accountable to get him to take a real strong stand against this and really do something like vote against the military appropriation. That's going to be happening at 11:30 on Saturday, and then 2 hours later at 1:30 at 115 Coral Street, there's going to be a meeting, actually, of the 145, there's going to be a meeting of the Human Rights Organization at the dining bay of Coral Street, for those of you who want to check that out. Sitting patiently in the studio, listening to all this, or possibly just wondering where they can lie down for the night and get a little sleep, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And you are out there. If you have anything you want to say or any thoughts, there was a decision, I guess it was yesterday, about medical marijuana, essentially upholding the right of the federal government on the Raich decision to criminalize, refusing to enjoin the feds, refusing to find unconstitutional the federal law that says they can bust medical marijuana. So people are using medical marijuana are now open to major busts from the feds, as they always were. Of course, and to me, that's important. That's bad. I don't like that at all. But what I'm more concerned about, because more frequently in this county, we don't get busts from the feds. We had one of those in 2002, and that was it. We get busts from the local DA. DA Bob Lee will grab Roger Mensch of the Felton Emporium, arrest him again and then again, and put felony charges on him for doing what? Cultivating, transporting, selling, possessing medical marijuana, which he sells to people with medical marijuana cards. How can Lee get away with this kind of shit in a jurisdiction which voted overwhelmingly to allow medical marijuana? And then even voted to essentially stop the police from going after recreational marijuana. That's the city, at least, to stop the police from going after recreational marijuana with Measure K. Well, the answer is our major activists aren't speaking out on this issue. I'm not hearing anything from activists. Well, one of them left town, Andrea Tischler, Theodora Carey, Anita Henry. Well, she actually did speak out about it on the radio the last couple times, but her major concern is profiteering, which she and I disagree on that in a certain sense, because my major concern is making sure that people can go somewhere and buy some marijuana until such time as we all have the guts to come out of our houses and start smoking it or using it where we need to and supporting those who are harassed by the police. How do you support them? Well, I know. I mean, it's hard to say. And so how do you support the street performers when Officer Brandt comes rolling around with his ticket book, you know, and his flashlight at 11:30 at night or 10:30 at night? What do you do? Well, you know, if somebody's getting a ticket for sitting on the sidewalk, you can sit down beside him. That's one thing you could do. You could say, Officer Brandt, give me a ticket too if you'd like, because I don't think this person's doing anything wrong. And when that happened en masse in 1994, at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific, the cops issued 39 tickets, and actually they issued more than that, but they arrested 39 people, and they saw more people come and sit down, and they just gave up. And then they beat a couple people up and left. That was under Mayor Kennedy in 1994. But it can be done. People can stand up to this or sit down to this. And, you know, who knows what the right way to do it is. We have to start thinking about ways to stand up to this kind of intimidation. So that's some of the discussion of what's coming up. More from the streets. Call in number 427-3772.
A group of merry singers and players.
From the beginning.
They're inside the confines of the, I call it the forbidden fence inside the area between Campesino and Alfresco's, which is no longer forbidden because the merchants have become quite reasonable since the earlier fence was erected to drive away young people in 2002. So I'm talking to
somebody.
And somebody, you have actually a good rap on a police officer. I'm so often critical of the police that we need a couple of positive comments. You have something to say about Officer Peabody.
Oh, the community service officer. He's not really a police officer.
Well, he has light blue. He's heading in the direction of dark blue.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But he's still light blue. We might save him yet.
Hopefully.
Yeah. It won't take as much bleach to clean him up.
It makes me blue to think about it.
Yeah.
But you say you've seen some positive stuff from him?
Yeah, he let me go on a ticket one night. I had to argue with him.
Right.
But he let me go on it.
Bike ticket?
Bike ticket.
Biking the wrong way?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Shocking.
But he did write up, within an hour later, I seen him writing two college girls up. Which sort of surprised me because I thought it would be the other way around and they'd be writing me up and letting the call.
More attractive and he wanted to talk to them.
That could be.
That's a cynical
view. I wouldn't put it past, you know.
He's probably a family man, and a monogamous family man. And this, I'm afraid, is something that has already been played here. I seem to have been keeping bad records, and I'm not actually noting everything that's been played. Let's turn to something that actually hasn't been played.
Down here, Pacific Garden Mall, March 6th, nice Tuesday night, and we got somebody who got a camping ticket, and you can say your first name if you want.
I go by Travis.
All right, Travis, well, we just appreciate you sharing this, so we want to let people know that crazy, nutty stuff that's going down here with the cops, and you want to tell a story about your ticket, what happened?
Well, it wasn't really much of a story. I mean, it was a pretty standard issue, but I mean, at the same time, the dude felt the need to give us a ticket.
Yeah.
Even though he told us, like, he never visited that area,
yeah.
You know, and that he wouldn't be back for the rest of the night. But still, we felt the need to give us a ticket instead of us. I mean, we didn't mess anything up.
Were you under a building?
No, I was behind some trees next to a bike row.
Downtown?
Evergreen something.
A school?
No, it wasn't a school. It was a bike lane going up through, and then there's a walking bridge that goes over the highway. It was behind these two trees, and next thing I know, there was a light on us. We got carded, and we got ticketed. I don't even know how much the ticket's going to be, but when... This is what I think things are getting messed up. When it's a crime to sleep, okay? why is it? I mean, it's a human need and a human right to have sleep, okay? It's a human right. It's not in the Constitution, but it is a human right. Everybody deserves sleep, you know? Personally, for me, I'm epileptic, so if I was to not get enough sleep, I would probably have, you know, some grandma seizures the next day.
But what do you think about people sleeping in their houses who are afraid that there's strangers around their house?
Well, that's just America right there. No, seriously, they come out with these movies like The Hitcher, you know, and they come out with these other movies, you know, and they come out with all these books, and people are actually trained to stay the hell away from us.
Yeah, kind of paranoia stuff.
Yeah, like we're the guy that meets them in the dark alleyway and robs them for every little penny they have or something like that.
So you think it's a lot of propaganda?
Yeah, it's pretty much a rash generalization of what homeless people are.
Yeah.
This person's desperate, this person's needy, and he'll do anything to get what he wants.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. You try to be outside, and you're lucky if you get a place to sleep.
Yeah.
You know, very few people are willing to steal, but I suppose if you get desperate.
Personally, I did do a petty theft when I was up in Arcata, and I got a $480 ticket for a $3 chocolate bar.
I was just going to say, it was probably food.
Yeah.
This is something we also should be allowed to do.
$480 ticket for a chocolate bar.
Yeah.
And, that was fun.
Ridiculous. That's where?
That was up in Arcata, California.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're cracking down on the homeless a lot down there. We hear from a guy up there that's been communicating to us about that. So,
They tell me any type of theft after the first theft is a straight-up felony, and you can get 5 years in prison for it. So I haven't really stolen anything at all since that point.
Yeah, well, you know, you're a hard criminal if you're stealing chocolate.
Yeah, oh, totally. Well, it was really good chocolate, though.
Yeah, well, it's really important.
It was dark chocolate. It wasn't fair trade, though. I would never steal fair trade chocolate.
Your drug of your choice.
Yes, chocolate. Dark chocolate. That is definitely the thing to do.
Well, we appreciate you sharing your thing. You don't have anything else that happened that night that you would think, like, how the cops acted? How did you feel about the way they treated you? Were they polite or were they mean?
I was a ranger, actually. I was a ranger in an SUV, and he had a spotlight on us and stuff like that.
Kind of authoritarian or friendly or?
Pretty authoritative. He... You know, made some small talk here and there about, like, how he never comes up there or anything like that. It was pretty much like we asked him, like, well, where do you sleep around here if we're not allowed to sleep?
Yeah.
And he told us straight up, like, it's pretty much a game of cat and mouse. You know, if you stay hidden and we can't see you, then you're not going to get arrested or get a ticket.
Wow, how friendly. Welcome to Santa Cruz.
No. Santa Cruz, no. Welcome to America. Okay?
All right. Basically what you feel.
This isn't just one problem in California. Like, I was dealing with this stuff over in Boston for 3 or 4 years. And basically, from what I've noticed right now, a lot of people come to California from the East Coast so they can get a certain amount of freedom that you don't get over on the East Coast. Like, technically, if you sit in front of any type of mailbox or even sit on your backpack, you get a $75 ticket.
Just for sitting on a backpack?
Or putting your backpack down.
Okay. Well, it's almost like that. There are certain times of places where you sit around here where you can get a ticket.
It's going to turn into that, though. And what I'm realizing, I've been here for a while, you know, and what I'm starting to realize is that California is slowly becoming like the East Coast. Not quite the temperature-wise, but people are starting to act differently.
Right, it used to be kind of a cool place where you could come and relax.
Everyone's cool, and you know, and people would stop by and be like, hey, how's it going? But here and there, you know, you don't really see it anymore.
Wow.
You know, it's slowly dying. It's dying off.
You don't think we could change that and make it better?
Well, you think of changes, and what I've been thinking is, like, you know, back in the 1928 through 1940s, they had these hobo jungles, you know? Those were really good ideas until crime started taking place and there were murders and stuff like that. And that's what they're afraid of, is something like that's going to happen again, you know? So I kind of... I kind of see their position, but at the same time, people need to sleep, and if people don't get that sleep, bad things can happen.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh,
I didn't.
Yeah, they can go crazy.
I didn't get enough sleep one night, and I knocked 8 teeth out having a seizure and shattered the top palate of my jaw. I ended up with my my jaw wired shut for 2 months. I was drinking everything through a straw, and you know why? Because I got woken up. You can't sleep here.
Wow.
So I went to the closest public restroom I could find, and I was going to go to the bathroom, and the next thing I know, I'm coming out of a seizure. I'm picking my teeth up off the floor.
Oh, my God.
You know? That's how I lost this one, actually. But, yeah, it's crazy. And
so what's your answer? What do you think is the answer? Do you think we should fight the law, or do you think we should run away and leave America?
I don't know. Something's got to happen, though. And you can, I mean,
if we got all together.
If you have the financial, you know, to be able to take it to a trial, you know, or even a Supreme Court, if you have the financial stability to do that, or, you know, the attorneys to do it, then I suggest by all means that you guys should do it.
Yeah.
You know, totally.
And it's the Constitution. We have the right.
Yes. You have a right. You have a right to freedom, you know? And how can you be free when people aren't letting you be free?
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, if you ever want to stick around for a while and help support this, we are going to be trying to do this. I can give you a card for the meeting we're having tomorrow morning. Wednesdays at the courthouse, downstairs at the cafe, people get together to talk about fighting the law. And they like to do protests. They like to table down here and get more people involved. We want a number of people eventually protesting, but people seem to always scatter off and say, no, I don't want to do it. I'll just take care of myself. So we keep trying to find people who really want to stop running because we think that's not the answer.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't necessarily say I'm running away. I'm just going to a better place in a little while.
And where do you think that is?
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica, that's the paradise of the place to go. Follow your horizon and
it's the rainforest.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've never seen a rainforest except maybe on Channel 10 or anything like that. So.
You know, there's government stuff going on down there.
I'm definitely going to stick around here for at least a month, maybe, and then I'm going to start heading up north, maybe further to hippie country.
I hope you find there.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe you have to take our card and communicate to us. Let us know how it's going on down there, up there.
Okay. Up there or down there. Yeah, either or.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot for sharing with us.
No problem.
All right. I also talked to a lady that night, or that's tonight. So I've just been down, and been talking to a woman that felt really paranoid. She said that a bunch of her friends have been wandering up and down the streets after being roused out of their sleeping spaces, and pretty much all night just wandering around because they're not allowed to go to sleep. And she's feeling really uncomfortable about that. How can we deal with the cops, she's saying? How can we deal with this? And she said that she and her friends had been harassed in a car, and they had come up with some kind of laws that they found out they couldn't press on them, and then they came up with other things that they could do to harass them. And she knew it was harassing. She knew they were making stuff up in order to bother them, or, you know, come up with a ticket to give them. And she said she was feeling very paranoid and very uncomfortable and frightened. And, you know, not frightened of the rapist on the street or the criminal, but afraid of the cops. And, you know, looking very, you know, just like, I don't know what to do. I just feel really frightened, you know. So that was, she wasn't really into being interviewed, so I'm just commenting about it and letting you know what happened.
And that's a report from actually a woman who called in earlier, Valerie Christie, who does a Tuesday evening sing-along tabling out on Pacific Avenue in front of New Leaf Market, or actually it varies, but it's somewhere in that general vicinity. Well, actually, it's in front of the New Leaf Market area. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. The show you're listening to is called Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. You can give a call in if you've got some thoughts, criticisms, additions, subtractions, multiplications, you name it. It's 427-3772. 427-FRSC is the phone number to call. You know, it's not only Santa Cruz that has a problem, and it's not only cities that have a sleeping ban like Santa Cruz that have a problem. L.A. has eliminated its sleeping ban for the homeless in Skid Row under federal court order. And yet, here's a story called A Police State on Skid Row by Ramona Ripston. She's the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California, and it was written on March 12, 2007. The Los Angeles is from the LATimes.com, if you'd like to check out the website. The Los Angeles Police Department has a message for Skid Row residents. The Fourth Amendment doesn't apply here. That's the constitutional protection from arbitrary searches, and LA police officers have been violating it since late last year by detaining, handcuffing, and going through people's pockets and possessions on the slimmest pretenses. Cecil Bledsoe is a 65-year-old African-American who was once homeless and now works as a counselor helping others find housing. He was on his way to the bus in December when a police car rolled up and officers ordered him against a wall, then searched and questioned him. Bledsoe was released because he had done nothing wrong. Police are also detaining homeless people for minor infractions, such as jaywalking or sitting on the sidewalk, then using those pretexts as a basis to search them. Sean Robertson was packing up his belongings one morning last November when police stood him against a wall and handcuffed him. They searched his stuff, ran his name, then let him go. Paul Johnson was searched in December by officers who told him that everybody down here is on probation or parole. Johnson isn't. The police officer who stopped him later admitted that he could not offer a reason for the search. These aren't the hardcore criminals police promised to round up when the LAPD assigned 50 more officers to Skid Row last September. They're ordinary people whose only mistake was being homeless in the wrong part of town. City leaders promised that the new officers would be a part of a strategy to solve the homeless problem that included housing and services. Instead, the city has done exactly what everyone said it should not do, send police out as its primary tool. We're seeing the inevitable result. We've been here before. 20 years ago, the city and civil rights groups agreed that police were going too far on Skid Row by trashing residents' belongings, as in Santa Cruz, as is an aside, a Ranger Wallace trashes homeless people's belongings in the Poganip. By trashing residents' belongings in twice daily sweeps. It would appear that we have miraculously solved the homeless problem of destitute homelessness in our community by simply declaring it illegal, actor Martin Sheen wrote in the Times that year. Since then, we've been caught in a disturbing cycle, with police abusing their power and then being challenged in court, only to either back down or be nudged into compliance by the courts. 3 years ago, a federal judge found that police were conducting arbitrary searches in the 50-square-block Skid Row area of L.A. and stopped them. The ACLU of Southern California and civil rights attorneys have filed a motion to extend that injunction. The police shouldn't need a judge's order to know that this kind of activity is unlawful. The Bill of Rights has a nearly 220-year-old prohibition against unreasonable searches. New York started to reduce homelessness only when it decided that an enforcement-only approach to the problem was inefficient and expensive. A 2004 study on the cost of homeless services in the U.S. shows that jails and prisons are twice as expensive as housing and shelter. LA's leaders say the police are stretched too thin, yet they seem to have deep pockets for Skid Row police and prosecutors while always coming up short for housing. Some say aggressive policing is working. Today, Skid Row's streets are strangely empty, as if hundreds of people who just months ago crowded the area's alleys every night have disappeared. Where have they gone? Some are in jail where they belong, a handful in pretrial diversion programs where they can get the help they need. The vast majority have moved to Hollywood, the Valley, or Venice. These places have fewer services that the homeless need. When this crackdown ends, they'll be back. We know where they haven't gone, into housing that's connected to services such as mental health care and job training, the only solution we know works. Now, I don't agree with that, but let's let that be. Meanwhile, constant police searches have added to the burdens of those who are seeking help for mental illness and addiction in Skid Row and complicated the efforts of those who would help them. The fear and stress people feel from interactions with the police adds significantly to their issues, Casey Horan, executive director of LAMP Community, a homeless services provider, said in a statement that the ACLU filed with the court. When people are subject to aggressive policing, it makes outreach more difficult. That's from the LATimes.com, a police state on Skid Row, article by Ramora Ripston. And this is an article, a comment on that article in the LA Homeless blog, which you can get by going to LA's Homeless blog. Has Skid Row become a police state? I think the term police state to refer to Skid Row is probably being used to attract attention. With crime in downtown being so concentrated, it's appropriate for the LAPD to concentrate its law enforcement resources. However, not at the expense of harassing innocent people who are homeless. Our city needs a balanced approach, both law enforcement and compassionate services and housing for the homeless. What's happening in Santa Cruz, of course, is my question. Do we have a balanced approach? Are more services being offered at the same time as more police are appearing on Pacific Avenue? Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of. Now, if anybody has new information, maybe Ken Cole at this Tuesday meeting of the Santa Cruz neighbors at the police station at 7 o'clock on Tuesday will have some more news and information for us. That's always possible. While we're waiting for that, anxiously awaiting, here's another bit of street interview. At least I hoped it was a street interview. Well, how about a little musical break while I'm getting it together here? So stay with me, because we're going to move right into the middle of a fifth dimension song. Or at least I'm going to try, if I can get the equipment to work here. Again, I remind you, if you'd like to be a part of this whole strange process, you can. Just do it by giving a call to 427-3772, and I'll be here.
Going through the motions, baby, I'll be in love.
And yes, that's technical problems again. My my apologies. I'm also having computer problems with a clicking computer that's going back and forth here. To work on that one. What am I going to do? Well, a couple of updates maybe might be appropriate here while I struggle to get it together here. I just got back from court today. I went to federal court in San Jose, and I've talked about this on the air a bit before. I've been trying to hold the city council responsible for abuses, particularly, of course, abuses against individuals who are trying to communicate matters to the public that city council doesn't want talked about. Or, you know, should we say, acting in a fashion which the city, not, should we say, obeying the city council's every whim or snap of the fingers and trying to establish a space in which people can actually speak, or actually using the law, the Brown Act, in such a way that people can participate at city council meetings, as in fact the Brown Act guarantees them the right to do. That's the state law that says you must be allowed to speak on every agenda item, at least for a certain period of time if you want to. If you're talking on topic on that item, that you must be allowed to be present at a council meeting. You don't have to give your name if you don't want to. You can speak anonymously. You can't be criticized or refused action just because refuse the opportunity to speak there just because they don't like what you have to say. And all these issues seem to be involved in city council's, well, at least involved in two arrests that I suffered, one back in 2002 for the infamous Heil Krone, or you're acting like a bunch of fascists, salute, and the second one for whispering in the audience. I was taken to jail and held in jail. And then sued them for false arrest. And the idea is not because I'm trying to become a millionaire, but because I don't think this should be happening to people there. And these cases take years to wend their ways through the court. So it's like 5 years after the first incident, and we're scheduled to go to trial on March 26th, Monday. And it's going to be quite a trial. It's going to be over in San Jose. Three former mayors are going to testify, at least. They're actually defendants in this case. And if they lose, the city will have to fork out a bunch of money, not so much to me, but to the attorneys who've been putting in a lot of time over the last 5 years suing them, and hopefully they'll have to be more careful about what they do, although these city council members are not necessarily too concerned about the city's pocketbook when it comes to, you know, proceeding to do whatever they want to do at council, regardless of the legal consequences, particularly the city attorney, who, John Barrasoni, gets paid extra for defending these cases, so why not? You know, I mean, it's a problem. So anyway, I went there today to what's called a pretrial hearing with two attorneys. And we faced the city's attorneys. And the real issue coming up for those who want to follow that particular trial is how much shit can the city throw at us? That is to say, they can throw like hundreds of pages of documents at us claiming that in the past, the mayor has characterized me as disruptive in a city council meeting, even though I wasn't arrested for my behavior. I never had a hearing on any of that stuff. It's just a word applied by the chair of the meeting, the mayor usually, in a city council meeting. And is that going to be something that's going to be brought before a jury? Well, we told the judge, you can't allow this stuff in. You have to ask yourself and give the jury a very simple issue. Was I disruptive on these two occasions when I was denied my right to be at the meeting, dragged out, and arrested, or led out in this case, because the two officers involved did not physically abuse me, unlike a more recent arrest where I was abused by Lieutenant Clark. So that's going to be the issue, whether the city can bring in all kinds of things, or whether, in fact, we can limit it to those two incidents. And the trial, again, starts very soon, and it'll be over in San Jose. Maybe we can do a little carpooling to give people an opportunity to go and watch it if they're interested. It will not be on your TV. The trial will not be televised. And I don't know how many people are going to be interested, but it doesn't directly concern itself with, let's say, the sleeping ban or the arrest of homeless people or the seizure of their property, which I think is a matter of concern to a broader number of people than whether you can speak at a city council meeting in a controversial manner, whether the mayor is overstepping his prerogatives by labeling behavior that is not disruptive, disruptive. In a certain sense, it is, because if a mayor can do that with impunity, if he can do that whenever he wants, then it puts a real chill on people going to city council. But on the other hand, the real issue is to be whether we're going to be changing some of these laws and police practices so that people can at least wear their own survival gear, sleep in camps safely together outside until such time as there are adequate resources like, you know, jobs and housing for people to use. You know, then we can talk about, oh, we have better things for people than mere campgrounds or the mere right to, you know, put up your own tent or sleep in your own sleeping bag. Until that time, people use those kind of arguments and say, oh, you can always go to this miserable, crowded shelter, get up at 6 in the morning and leave, provided you aren't a user of medical marijuana, you aren't in a couple, you don't have a night job, you don't have a dog with you, you don't have a vehicle you have to take care of. They can't use those kinds of arguments because, actually, they can't use the kinds of arguments in Los Angeles anymore, or actually in Santa Barbara anymore. In Los Angeles because of the so-called Jones decision, which I've talked about, and in Santa Barbara because of the use of the necessity defense and a court ruling in a necessity defense case that you can't even force someone to go to a religious shelter if a bed is available if they're going to be forced to take religious conditioning as a condition of their having a place to sleep. You have to let them sleep in their vehicle if that's what they have. These are all important issues, but even more important is a little music while I try to figure out why this computer is on the fritz and blinking back and forth. Let's see if we can do that. And again, one more time, we'll go for the fifth dimension.
Get that good feeling.
All right, well, we're down here at Hot Dog Feed, or also Humanity for the Homeless, Monday Night Munch-Along. It's about 6:20. We have a child in a carriage, a woman, presumably mother to the child, and a man with a drum. Your name, sir?
My name is Justin, once again.
And your name, once again?
Russo.
And your name?
What's your name?
Damien it is. So what's cooking here? What news do we have from the man with the drum?
Well, I don't know. You mind if I say something on here?
Not at all.
Okay, you mind if I take it from you?
Okay.
Because I'll have to get a little bit loud here. From what I see, what a skeletal wreck of a man this is. Translucent flesh and feeble bones, the kind of temple where the whores and villains try to tempt the holistic tones. A village ran rampant with free thought to free form and the free and clear. Where the matters at hand are shelled out like lint at a laundromat to sift and focus on the bigger, better, now. We all have a little sin that needs venting, virtues for the rending, and laws and systems and stems that have ripped from the branches of office. Do you know what your post entails? Do you serve a purpose or purposely serve? Wind down inside your atavistic galore the value of a summer spent and a winter earned. For the rest of us, there's always Sunday. The day of the week that reeks of rest, so all we do is catch our breath so we can wade naked in the bloody pool and place our hand on the big black book to watch the knives zigzag between our aching fingers. A vacation is a countdown. T-minus your life in counting. Time to drag your tongue across the sugar cube and hope you get a taste. The hell is all this for? What the hell is going on? Say, you're me and I'm you, and they all watch the things we do, and like a smack of spite, they threw me down the stairs. I haven't felt like this in years. The great magnet of malicious, magnanimous refuse. Let me go and punch me into the dead spout again. It's where we all go when there's no one else around, and there wasn't really anyone to begin with, now was there? Sanctimonious, pretentious, dastardly bastards with their thumb on the pulse and a finger on the trigger. Classified, my ass, that's a fucking secret and you know it. Government is another way to say better than you. It's like ice with no pick, a murder charge that won't stick. It's like a whole other world where you can smell the food, but you can't touch the silverware. What luck? Fascism you can vote for. Isn't that sweet?
We've been listening to the poetry.
That's all I had to say, really.
Thank you, man.
Thank you, sir.
Again, about 6:25, and we're talking to.
I was crossing the intersection.
Name again, sir.
Intersection from.
What's your name?
George Wright. And copy put on his light, and I think I was doing the club fire with the band Great White like back in 3 years ago. And I'm probably going to do community service and then go do community service and get the crap out of the way and say the hell with it.
Well, what did you get a ticket for?
I can't read the damn thing.
But you got a ticket for what? You know what he said? You know what he told you? He's looking for his ticket, pulling it out of his pocket. Were you taken to jail or just cited?
No, just cited.
But you don't know what they ticketed you for?
Thank you very much.
I have to get the ticket out.
Still looking for his ticket.
Okay.
What's the fine?
$130.
Who gave you the ticket?
Cop. He was an idiot. I don't like the guy.
You don't know his name?
No, I have no idea.
And when was this?
Earlier when I was going to the shelter to get something to eat.
And what did he say he was ticketing you for?
I couldn't understand really what, maybe you can read it.
All right, let's take a look here. We have a citation to Jimmy Wright for 12th, that's today, at 3:45, bicycle on the wrong side of the roadway. Theodora, greetings.
I was asking what it was, too, a sleeping ticket.
With Theodora Carey. Thank you, George. We hope you do well on this ridiculous citation. Disqualify the referee, and I'll tell you more how to do that in a bit.
Okay, well.
Theodora. So it's about 3:05 on the 13th of March at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting after the session, the only session of the City Council.
Yes.
Correct, February 27th. Council members, I'm here to demand a correction of the.
And actually, since I'm still fighting with the computer here, or just actually watching helplessly while it flicks back and forth, like the tail of some wild cat. I'm going to turn now briefly to the City Council meeting of last Tuesday, where I actually, it was a council meeting where you couldn't really do too much if you wanted to speak at oral communications. You had to wait 2.5 hours until the end of the meeting and not knowing when that would end. It was scheduled at the unusual time of the afternoon. Normally, such oral communications are in the evening at 7, but increasingly, Mayor Riley has been scheduling it at the end of the afternoon, which cuts down on the number of people who show up, because who wants to wait 2.5 hours to speak for 3 minutes? Well, a couple of diehards do, but in this case, I wasn't one of them. I was, however, there speaking about the City Council's minutes of the previous meeting. Sounds a little arcane. What it means is that I was trying to follow up on something I've talked about on the air, which is the City Council's refusal to allow public comment on the item involving Officer Howes. Officer Howes is an officer who served for 22 years in Santa Cruz. I talked about him earlier in the show. I'm a critic of his, which, you know, is neither here nor there. But if an officer is going to be presented with an award at City Council by the City Council, that is actually an action item which the city is engaged in, and the community should have the right to comment. If it doesn't have the right to comment, at least that fact should be reflected accurately in the minutes, and no mention was made of it, so I appeared at the City Council and made the following remarks.
I use the word demand not to be rude or presumptuous, but because the public record is a significant thing and an accurate and complete account of what happens. It's most important for those who weren't able to attend the meeting in question. And it's particularly important in this case because the minutes say that I was accused of disrupting the meeting. Page 2 reads, Mayor Riley stated to Mr. Norris he'd been noticed twice about speaking out from the audience, and she requested that he refrain from interrupting the meeting in the future, and she requested he leave the chamber, so he did it again. That's page 2. That has a mellow sound to it. But actually, it's far from that. It's not even accurate. The mayor's comment to me was the first time that she had mentioned the matter, so it wasn't, I'd been warned twice before. I was warned at that point. The record gives the impression of someone repeatedly warned, who then ignored those warnings. What has happened before in these chambers in council is that the council, unhappy with an opinion from the floor, briefly spoken, interrupts, might I even say, disrupts its own meeting to threaten an unpopular member of the public with expulsion or arrest. This is the context of this disruption claim. What really happened? The mayor and the city attorney decided to deny the public, me specifically, the ability to comment on an item on the agenda, the council's presentation of a hero award to Officer Howes, done very publicly, very officially, on a noticed agenda, and in the middle of a regular city council meeting. Now, regard Howes as a very controversial guy among the homeless. His record ranges from ancient abusive arrests of homeless people 2 nights after the October earthquake in 1989,
to door-to-door anti-homeless politicking a decade later, to discriminatory treatment of civil rights groups seeking to consult with the police. Mayor Riley and Attorney Barasoni decided to suppress any criticism of Howe's, which violates the state law, the First Amendment, and I believe the spirit of true democratic exchange. I'm filing a Brown Act complaint about this, which I imagine both these two will ignore. But what actually happened? Because we're talking about the minutes. The minutes read, for the record, Councilmember Rotkin requested it be noted that Robert Norris has disrupted the meeting twice. What Mr. Rotkin actually said, and I have it here on tape, was, will you please advise Mr. Norris has disrupted the meeting twice. Now, if he does it a third time, I would like to have him dragged out of the meeting.
Yeah.
This is a serious threat. It is intimidating. The last time he made that threat, Lieutenant Clark assaulted me here at the microphone. So it's important the record reflect what actually happened. There's no mention of a fairly lengthy rationalization Riley and Barasoni gave in explaining away how a city council presentation, which is done individually and collectively by each city council member, can somehow be described as simply witnessing. The minutes need to reflect the fact that I tried to remind the council of this, and that after I did so, I was threatened with expulsion for doing so. That's not okay. I request that the minutes be corrected.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely right. Mayor Riley, Vice Mayor Coonerty, City Council. You know, I've been expelled, kicked out, stomped on in this City Hall for about 7 years. I've watched Robert be destroyed by the...
And this is Michael Tomasi speaking in support of me. I'm not going to play his remarks because, frankly, though I appreciate his being supportive, I don't think they're particularly pertinent. And often I think when the City Council lets Michael Tomasi go on kind of on alternate topics, it's a way they have of actually discrediting other people who are trying to talk on relevant topics that they don't want to hear from, because what they then claim is we have to have tighter controls because people like Michael Tomasi would talk forever. In fact, they choose to allow Michael to talk off topic. Because he's sort of, you know, he's an old vet and we want to be sympathetic to him and so forth. And I like him and I think he deserves much better treatment than he's getting from this community and from the police department. But, you know, you can't use him as your shield for proceeding to cut back public comment time because otherwise there's the menace of Michael Tomasi. I mean, it's a very nice excuse for them to use. Well, I have not been able to fix this computer, but hopefully very soon I'll be getting some technical support because soon coming into the studio as the next broadcaster will be Uncle Dennis, who will be doing his show From the Cream to the Dregs. So perhaps as a sort of a precursor to that and as a sort of a little something that he might actually enjoy. Assuming I can find it, a little more of the fifth dimension. And that should take us into the 8 o'clock hour. I'll be back on Sunday, 9:30 in the morning, maybe a little before. Join me then if you'd like. And I'll probably be up at Kresge College with the Food Not Bombs discussion by Keith McHenry happening at 7 o'clock tomorrow night, possibly at 11:30 on Saturday at the anti-war rally in the county building, and at the Human Rights Organization later on Saturday, 1:45 at Coral Street, 115 Coral Street. Join me there if you'd like.
Another sleepy, dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. Oh, yes, he was. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. hollered at the back door.
Y'all remember, wipe your feet.
And then she said,
I heard the news today from Choctaw Ridge. They tell me Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Papa said to Mama, as he passed around the black eyed peas,
you know, that Billy Joe never had a lick of sense. Now pass the biscuits, please. I got 5 more acres in the lower 40 I got to plow.
Then Mama said,
it was a shame about Billy Joe anyhow. Seems like nothing ever comes to any good up on Choctaw Ridge. And now Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Brother said,
you know, I recollect when me and Tom and Billy Joe put a frog down your back at the Kara County Picture Show. Say, when you're talking to him at the church,
tater pie.
You know it don't seem right. You know I saw him at the sawmill yesterday. Well, for Choctaw Ridge. And now you tell me Billy Joe's jumped off the Tallahatchie. Child, what's happened to your appetite? Well, I've been cooking all month. Ain't touched a single bite. You know that nice young preacher, Brother Taylor, stopped by to say,
by the way, I saw a girl that looked a lot like yours up on Choctaw Ridge, and she and Billy Joe were throwing something off the Tallahatchie Ridge. Have mercy.
Well, a year has come and gone since we heard the news about Billy Joe. Brother married Becky Thompson, and they bought a store in Tupelo. There was a virus going around, Papa called it, and he died last spring. And now Mama doesn't feel like doing much of anything. And me, well, I spend a from Shatari and drop them into the muddy water of the Tallahatchie Bridge, and drop them into the muddy water of the Tallahatchie Bridge.